Just before John comes, we're going to have our reading. And our reading tonight is from John's Gospel, chapter 4, verses 1 to 32, and then finishing off 39 to 42. John chapter 4, verse 1. Now Jesus learned that the Pharisee had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria, so he came to the town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up in eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where you must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know, and we worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is Spirit, and his worshippers must worship in the Spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he." Then the disciples rejoined Jesus. Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asked, "What do you want?" or "Why are you talking with her?" Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, "Come, see a man who has told me everything I've ever done. Could this be the Messiah?" They came out of the town and made their way towards him. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, "Rabbi, eat something." But he said to them, "I have food to eat that you know nothing about." And then we move to 39. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. "He told me everything I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, "We no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard this for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Saviour of the world."
Thank you, Sue. A passage that I suggest is probably quite well known to most of us. Have you heard it before? Put your hand up if you've heard that before. Yeah, and the trouble is sometimes we can get a bit familiar with passages like this, so we know it so well. There was a friend of mine at Bible college, and every time this passage was read, or we heard it read, he'd say to me, "Do you know that story is a story about a very big woman?" And I thought, what's he on about? Anyway, he kept saying, every time it was read out, he'd say the same thing. And I said to him, "Okay, come on, why do you say this story is about somebody who's a very big woman?" He said, "It's obvious, it's because it's about a woman of some area." Sorry. So Jesus and the disciples, they decide to take the shortcut through Samaria. It's a place that the Jews would often not go. They'd rather kind of skirt round it. But they go through Samaria, and Jesus, understandably, wants some me time. He wants some space. So he sends the disciples off to get food. And at last, I think for Jesus, he's probably thinking, "Oh, I can actually get away from the guys for a while and just have some time, me and Father." But that comes to a quick stop, because along comes this lady, however big she was. She comes to the well where Jesus is sat and starts drawing water. Now, this is unusual, because generally speaking, in those climates, and I certainly from Cambodia I know this, when women would come to get water, it was generally at the start of the day or at the end of the day when it was cooler. You don't really want to be lobbing a great big bucket full of water when it's boiling hot. So the fact that this is the middle of the day and Jesus is sat there tells us something about this lady. She was trying to avoid everybody else, thinking she could just come and this chap who's probably a Jew would ignore her. She starts to get her water, and then Jesus speaks to her. Even though he probably wants to be alone, something more important than that occurs to him. So he sees this lady drawing water and he asks her for a drink. Now this is really strange. Now we might think, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that in those days there were all sorts of taboos about what you did and you didn't do. And one thing you didn't do if you were a Jew and if you were a male Jew was speak to a lady when you're on your own. That was not done. And for a Jew to speak to a Samaritan woman, this was really, really bad. What makes it even worse is when we find out a little bit more about this lady later on in the story. So Jesus puts aside his desire for some me space because he's got work to do, and he engages this woman in conversation. And Jesus is brilliant at this because he can see her immediate need is she's come to get water. And it's hot. So understandably, he says to her, "Can I have a drink?" Now the woman is probably thinking, "He talked to me. How bizarre is that? This man, this Jewish man, is talking to me. Does he not know who I am? Does he not know the shame that I bear?" But he talks and he says, "Can I have a drink?" And she's engaged then in conversation with him. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail in this passage. You've probably heard the detail of this before. But the fact that Jesus starts to talk to her tells her something incredible, that she is valuable, that she matters. And I don't know about you, sometimes I can feel that I'm not actually that valuable, that I don't really matter. And when someone notices you in those situations, it can be quite shocking. When someone sees you, well, that's quite something. And Jesus sees this woman. He asks her for a drink. And she's prepared to give him a drink, but she kind of looks at him to think, well, what are you doing speaking to me? And then they engage in this conversation. Now, during the course of the conversation, it becomes apparent that Jesus has had a kind of a word of knowledge about this woman. He knows, presumably from the fact she's there on her own in the middle of the day, that something isn't quite right. But the Spirit of God whispers into his head, this woman is living a sinful life. It seems that she's been married at least 5 times, and she's now living with another man who is not her husband. And in those days, that was a deeply shameful thing. So much so that probably this woman was ostracized from the rest of her community. She would probably stay away from people. She would keep her head down and just go through the business of life. But Jesus sees her, and he talks to her, and he asks her for a drink. And he teases her a bit. He says, "You know, if you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for a drink. And I'd be giving you some really quality water." But she doesn't really quite know what he's on about, because as typically in John's gospel, there's kind of a conversation going on two levels. There's the kind of the practical water level, and then there's the kind of spiritual water level. And often Jesus is taking people and he's taking them from the mundane and he's saying, "Look up, because there's more, you know. There's more to life than this." And so they have this conversation, and Jesus says to her, "Why don't you go and get your husband? Let's call him in on this." And then the woman thinks, "Oh, now I'm in trouble." And she doesn't lie. She says to him, "I have no husband." And Jesus says, no, I know. You've had five, haven't you? And the man you're currently living with, he's not your husband. And boom, this woman is now really interested. Not only this bloke talking to her, not only has he seen her, not only is he tempting her with water that she doesn't have to keep coming to the well for. Now she's thinking, hang on a minute. He's a Jew, he's passing through, he won't have been talking to any of the people here. How does he know my story? And she's hooked. Because Jesus sees her, he engages her, he tempts her, and he knows her. He knows stuff about her that he couldn't possibly have known. And so excited is she that this man has engaged her and sees her and knows her. She can't keep this to herself. And after this conversation, she goes off. Now, remember, this is a woman who's trying to avoid everybody else, who's there in the heat of the day, trying to avoid all the people that she feels shameful around, keeps her head down. Suddenly, you kind of get this bit at the end of John's Gospel. I'm going to jump straight there, where it says something like this. If I can find it. Leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? Now, that doesn't sound radical in itself, apart from the fact that this is a woman who's trying to avoid everybody, trying to keep her head down, trying to stay away, getting water in the middle of the day so it's because nobody else will be there. And suddenly, after this encounter with Jesus, where he seems to know all about her, so excited is she to talk to her, to talk to people, she forgets all about the fact she's trying to hide from them, and she goes into town where everybody would be shaming her, and she says, come and meet this bloke! Come and meet this man! He told me everything I ever did! This is amazing! Do you think he could be the Messiah, the one we've been waiting for? He could be the one! Now that's quite a change. It was wonderful to hear the testimony earlier of your youth work. I thought it was very exciting. A change has happened in her life. God got hold of her. God can get hold of anyone, even women who are thinking themselves nobody, who are ashamed, who'd live this immoral life. Jesus doesn't condemn her. He doesn't judge her. He values her. And in that engagement that makes her feel worthy, she goes and she tells people that were previously shunning her, you want to come and meet this bloke? I think he could be the one. Now, there's something about that that I get quite excited about, that this woman could be so turned around that when she has an encounter with Jesus, she just cannot keep it to herself. She's got to tell people. And so shocked to the people of that town that they kind of think, this is that woman who lives down the street. She's had five husbands, you know. Oh. They are thinking, well, let's go and see this bloke. Then something's happened, and off they go to meet Jesus. And they want to listen to him because now they're interested. And Jesus is encouraged, and he spends 2 days there. Imagine that teaching. Wouldn't you just love to have been there for 2 days listening to Jesus teach? Be even better than Andrew Gardner. Oh, it'd be good. So this woman's life is transformed. She's an ordinary person who has an encounter with Jesus, and suddenly she can't keep it to herself. Now, do you know, I wonder sometimes, we talk about the gospel of being good news, and yet I wonder whether we really believe it's good news or not. When's the last time that any of us have been so full of Jesus that we couldn't keep it to ourselves? When's the last time that you were so bursting full of Jesus you had to tell someone? I'm not going to ask you to answer that because it might be embarrassing. Now, I don't know about you, Sue and I quite like films. And if we see a good film, something about me wants to tell other people, you know, you want to see this film, it's just out and blah, blah, blah. And it's quite easy to talk about that. Films are great, but after the film is finished, that's the end of it. Jesus is going to transform our lives. So why is it so much more difficult to talk to people about the most incredible man who's ever lived, who can change your whole life around? I'm not sure. But tonight, what I'd like to do is introduce you to a few ordinary people who've had an encounter with Jesus and their life has been turned around a little bit like this Samaritan woman. They've just got stories to tell and they can't be here to tell their stories, so I want to tell their stories tonight. So can we have the first picture up? Cape Canaveral at the back. Well, fantastic. See, Garstang would be struggling with that. We'd have all sorts of things going. Straight up. Now, does anybody know this man? Uh-oh. Andrew, pretend you don't. This hero is David Ronson. Now, he's not famous for anything. He's holding a bottle of chili sauce there because he likes his curries hot. Now, David is part of the Garstang Free Methodist Church. He's been there for donkey's years. He does a job in a factory, he helps with the youth work. He's just an ordinary bloke. But when we said a little while ago that we were planning these mission trips this year, and one of the trips was to Cambodia, God whispered in David's ear, "You ought to go to that." Now, let me tell you something about David. David has never, ever left England in his life. He's in his mid-40s, and he doesn't want to go abroad because it's hot and scary. He's not even got a passport. And yet God whispered in his ear, "I want you to go." And David thought, "I can't be right. No, I'm mishearing it." But God whispered again, "I want you to go." And so David plucked up all the courage he could muster, and he came and said, "I think God's calling me to come on this, but I think I've got this wrong." And we said, "No, I think he's got it right." And so David Ronson got a passport, got the time off work, and got more and more scared. Until the time came a couple of weeks ago where we headed off in our little convoy down to Manchester Airport, and we got him to the airport the night before, and so worried was he, got this brilliant cowboy hat that he was going to take with him on the adventure to keep the sun off, and so scared was he that he left his brand new hat in the airport, and it's been picked up by somebody else now, and so he then had to go through the metal detector things and had to take his belt off, and so scared was he forgot to pick up his bits and pieces, and he left his watch behind, and by the time we'd actually got into the departure lounge, David was pretty scared. And then he realized he'd lost his watch, and so we had to go back and get it. He got on a plane. Have you ever seen white knuckles? But you know, when the moment that plane first took off on the first leg of our adventure, he just became a different bloke, because he was being obedient to God, because he wanted to go and tell people about Jesus. So David came with us to Cambodia, 3 flights over 5,500 miles. We got on the plane in Manchester at 2 degrees, and we got off at Siem Reap in Cambodia, 34 degrees. And it was hot, just like the spicy sauces he likes to use. And for 2 weeks, David Ronson had the adventure of his life, because everywhere somewhere we would throw him in at the deep end, and he coped, and he managed, and he was brilliant. I'm so proud of that man. And he's not going to be the same again, you know, because he went on an adventure. And you imagine what it was like when he went back into his factory this week, and they thought, "Here's Dave, he doesn't do anything, he doesn't go anywhere, bless him. And here's Dave, who's been to Cambodia," which most of his workmates don't even know where it is. And David could say, "I've just had the adventure of my life." Now, he's got a testimony because he took a step. He's an ordinary bloke who took an extraordinary step. He's got something to share now. It'll keep him going for ages. But I got him up this morning speaking in church. He's different, because he took an adventure with God. Like this lady, she took an adventure with Jesus. The people she was avoiding, suddenly she couldn't stop telling. And she changed the town. He could just change his workplace. There he is, out in Cambodia with one of the ladies that we work with. He'd got this presentation that he wanted to give, that he'd made himself, about how Jesus comes to save us. He gave it about 6 times, and he gave it brilliantly every time, even though he doesn't like speaking in public. And there's him presenting his little presentation to one of the Cambodian ladies, who's now going to use it wherever she goes. He's a changed man. Isn't that exciting? Let me show you another picture. Okay, now, this lady here is Petra. Now, she's German. And way back in Germany, I think in the 80s or 90s, she watched a film. Anybody seen the film The Killing Fields? It's a really powerful film about what happened in Cambodia in the 1970s. And Petra watched that film, and she thought to herself, "I want to go to Cambodia and serve God there. I think, God, you might be calling me." Well, years later, after going through college and all sorts of things, here she is living in Cambodia. She's married to Thai, who's the guy next door to her, who is Cambodian. And they have adopted 3 very disabled Cambodian children. Not only that, Petra, who's got this little bit of support from a church in Germany, has got this real heart for broken families and broken lives. And so she started this thing called Bamboo Shoots, which are little schools, for preschools, where very, very poor children from villages come, and they are taught English, which has become the kind of national language. And so Petra has got this team of people teaching English, and we went and helped them. Now, Thay has got all sorts of stories about the time of Pol Pot, who most of you, I'm sure, will have heard of. He won't tell those stories because that time was too awful for him. But now he and Petra are serving the kingdom of God, and they are seeing these little tiny lives being transformed, all because she watched a film. She had an encounter with Jesus when she watched that film. And now, well, you listen to her story. She can tell you story after story about what God's done through her. It's incredible to be around her. Just two people who Jesus has got hold of living extraordinary lives. Let's go to the next one, if we may. Now, this is Pastor Mong and his wife Mercy, which is pronounced Marcy, which is a bit confusing because my associate at Garstang is called Marcy. I kept saying, Marcy, no, you're not the wrong one. Yeah. Anyway, that's their little daughter, daughter Hannah. Mong comes from India, and he comes from a very poor village where missionaries came and told the stories of Jesus. And Mong heard a little whisper from God calling him to give his life on the mission field. So Mong left home with a bit of support, and he went out on mission. He married Mercy on the way. He went to Nepal, and then he felt God calling him to go to Cambodia. So by the time we met him, he'd been in Cambodia, I think, 10 years. He is as poor as poor. They've got next to nothing. But what they do is they go out into villages where nobody else is that bothered, and they set up these tiny little schools where the most raggedy, poor little mites come, and they teach them about Jesus. And through teaching the mites about Jesus, they try to attract the parents, and they teach them songs about Jesus, and they teach them English. Now, Mong is amazing because he can't actually speak the local language, Khmer, and he can hardly speak English. But he's set up these schools teaching English and teaching children about Jesus. And he's the most dogged, determined person I think I've ever met. And he said to me, "This is really tough. I mean, in 10 years, his father died back in India, and it was a matter of honor that he could go back. He couldn't afford to go back for his own father's funeral. His wife gave birth to Hannah, who he's got in his arms now. They couldn't afford any medical treatment, and because they were foreigners, the Khmer people thought they were rich, so they wanted to charge him a small fortune. They very nearly lost their first baby because they refused to kind of ask for help. They stuck it out, and they went through the Khmer sort of health service, and now they've got this healthy young girl. She's about to give birth to a second child, which we're going to try and help her with, so she doesn't have the same traumas. But these guys are real heroes. Absolute heroes. But if you talk to them, they would just say, well, just ordinary people. All we want to do is tell people about Jesus. And they do, and it's breathtaking to see what they come up with. Can we know the next one? Now, this is a family that help with Mong's ministry. The guy there is a guy called Dun. Now, he actually speaks a bit of English, which does help when you're trying to do a mission work. He's one of Mong's village workers. And one day as we were traveling somewhere, I got talking to Dun, and I just asked him to tell me a little bit about his life. And he was telling me that his mum was married, and they had 10 kids, which is quite something in itself. And then Pol Pot came to power with the Khmer Rouge. And Pol Pot had this idea that if we can get rid of all the intellectuals, and if we can get rid of anybody with any brains, we can just create this agricultural utopia. Just get everybody out growing rice and we'll be happy. And so anybody with any intelligence or qualifications, or anybody wearing glasses, anybody with a long name, Pol Pot basically said, we need to get rid of these people. Tun's 10 brothers and sisters all lost their lives between 75 and 78 in the year of the killing fields. Every one of them. His mum's husband was killed. She was the only one left. She married another man in a refugee camp. She survived, and she had two more children. Dun is one of them. Now, you'd think this family here would have cause for bitterness. And I would understand if they didn't want anything more to do with God ever. But Dun has given his life to making people know that communism isn't the answer. These kind of utopian man-made systems aren't the answer. The only answer the world needs is what this woman talked about, this savior of the world, Jesus Christ. So I don't know Dun's wife's name. I couldn't pronounce it even if I tried. These are their three kids, and this is the place that they live. Now, this is what really got Sue and I. Can we have our next little thing on? I think this might be a video, actually. Can we see if it works? Yeah. This is a video of where they live. That's their kitchen. That's their one room, and this is the school. See, Don and his wife believe so much in giving everything they've got to serve Jesus. They've given their house to the work of God. The kitchen is outside with one burner, which we just watched hens and dogs and all sorts of things crawling all over. That in there is their bedroom, their lounge, their sitting room. It's got two mattresses on the floor. It's got a little tiny portable TV, and five of them live in there. So that, and if we could swing around a little bit more, so that the space that they could have used for themselves has now been brightly coloured and turned into this beautiful place where the kids from the village can come and learn about Jesus. I just want to go, whoa, to people like that. We talk about sacrifice. We have no idea. These people live with nothing. And they do it joyfully because they know that actually Pol Pot wasn't the answer. Communism isn't the answer. Jesus Christ is the answer. And so the space they've got, they give over to the work of teaching kids about Jesus. We went there one night and talk about having to think on your feet. We were told we were going to lead a church service of 50 adults. When we got there was 50 kids, all tiny ones, screaming and yelling and wanted to be entertained. Now, I'm not a children's worker, but it was incredible to see. All the kids from the village had turned up, and it was just marvellous to be able to talk to them about Jesus and get them singing. It's one of the most incredible experiences I think I've ever had. But I tell you, that couple, when we get to heaven, they are going to be paraded down the centre, and we will give them a round of applause and say, go done. He's got a testimony to tell. I can tell a testimony about them because Jesus is at work through them, and it's beautiful. Who we got next? Ah! Rexa. Yeah. Now, I didn't realise who this bloke was when we first met him, but we were told afterwards. Rexa was a little boy during the Pol Pot years, and he wrote a book about his life. I think it's called Tears of My Soul. It's an amazing book, actually. Just reading it afresh, this guy lost 13 members of his family, his mum, his dad, his brothers, his sisters. I think only one sister survived. The whole of his family wiped out. He was bitter. He was angry. He was hurting. He survived through basically hiding in the jungle and living off roots and goodness knows what. He made his way and got to a refugee camp. Eventually, he was rehoused in Canada, where he was basically able to sort of put his life back together again. But the only reason that he can exist with all that hurt and all that pain is someone introduced him to Jesus. And he realized that Jesus was the only answer to the post-traumatic stress that he was going through. Jesus said to Rexa, I want you to go back to Cambodia and help rebuild it. And Rexa said, I'm not going anywhere near Cambodia ever again. I'm in Canada now. I've had my bit. I'm here. I just want to get on with a normal life. But God said, no, you've got something to offer. You go back. When we met him, he was back in Cambodia. And just teaching people about Jesus. He's built this hockey pitch for the kids in his village, and he challenged Great Britain to a game of hockey. So all our little team, who've probably never played hockey in their lives, were lined up against these youngsters, fit, healthy, mean. Now, I'd like to tell you that Great Britain did well. We were slaughtered. But it was great, great fun. It really was. This guy has gone through hell, but he's still hanging in with Jesus. He's still talking about him and how he enabled him to forgive. Truly remarkable man. Let me have another one. I don't know how. I can't actually see the clock very well. I think I'm doing all right for time, aren't I? Ah, now. Anybody know who this is? I like doing this, you see. I can come elsewhere. I can tell all sorts of stories. I could never do this back home because people know who they are. This is Sarah. She didn't come to Cambodia with us. She's just a mum. And she has a part-time job. She lives on a farm. And probably about 3 or 4 years ago, for the sake of her daughter Martha, she thought, I probably ought to go back to church. I've been as a kid, didn't really do much for me, but I ought to go for the sake of my kids so they can get some sort of knowledge about who Jesus is. So she turned up at our church, and she did the singing bit, and she listened, and she read, and slowly but surely, people started talking to her, and she started to think, crumbs, if this is true, if this isn't just fairy story stuff, this is incredible. And little by little, we saw Sarah from this tight bud kind of opened out until three years ago, Sarah gave her life to Jesus. Now, she hates speaking in public. She's very shy. She's very quiet. But she is now alive for Jesus. And she tells people she's alive to Jesus. So if we can have the next slide. This is Amanda, one of Sarah's friends. Does anybody know Amanda? That's good. She told Amanda, you know, you ought to try the church. It's actually quite fun. And this message of Jesus, if it's true, it could change everything. And Amanda was interested, and she thought, well, I'll give it a go. So she came along to church, and she brought her young son. And she thought, well, this is all right, and they're quite friendly here. And she started listening, and then we invited her to come on a Christianity Explored course. And little by little, she was asking questions and finding out. Last Easter, Amanda was baptized as a believer in Christ. She's now part of a small group that Sue and I run. She's just an ordinary single mum who's met Jesus and he's changed her life. Now, Sarah's gone on and spoken at our mother and toddler group. She hated every minute of it. She was absolutely in fear and trembling. One of the mums there listened to her and thought, do you know, I'm missing something in my life. And a year later, she thought, I'll give the church a try one night. And she came, and it was a sports reach night. And we were thinking, this doesn't really compute. But even that, God spoke through that night. And she actually listened, and she's become a Christian. And so now, she's telling her friends about Jesus. See, some of these guys have gone through traumas. Some of these guys have gone through the worst lives that we could ever imagine. Others have just had ordinary lives. The thing that connects them with this woman in the passage is they tell people about Jesus. And they witness to him in such a way that people want to know a little bit more. They may not show it, but they want to know a little bit more. So here's my question to you, the mighty forward Free Methodist Church. I mean, and how I'm even able to stand on the platform of this incredible establishment, I do not know. When's the last time you told someone about something God had done in your life? When's the last time you were so enthused about Jesus, you actually couldn't not tell someone? Now, I'm not saying that to make you feel guilty. I'm just making us think, hang on, am I sharing the good news? Now, see, the thing I've realized tonight is my story actually is their story. I can share about this incredible woman in Samaria. I can tell you these stories about all these people. And hopefully you're thinking, wow, that's amazing. See, you can tell your own story or you can tell somebody else's. But the key to all this is to tell the story. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, I've got nothing to say. Often when I go to church services and we ask for testimony time, I see somebody coming up from the back, and it takes them quite a while to get there, and they stand up and they say, 40 years ago in a worship service, I gave my life to Jesus. And that's the testimony, and that's marvelous. And I kind of think, fantastic. But what about last week? What about last month? It's marvelous that Jesus got hold of you 40 years ago, but what's he doing in you now? What's your testimony now? See, I don't believe that Jesus just calls us to faith so that we can hang on to our ticket to heaven and we can just float through the rest of our lives until we get there. We are called to be changing the world. The reason I wanted to show those pictures about those guys in Cambodia is they are changing the world now. They are giving little tots the chance to sing and to enjoy themselves and to learn English. They are changing their whole country. Now, there's probably more people here tonight than we saw at any church that we went to when we were in Cambodia. And I just think, what could we do? Now, our country's not in a mess like theirs is. Or is it? You know, Pastor Mong said to me, he said, I've heard stories. I'm saying this so you can understand it. His voice is not like this. But he said, I've heard stories that people in the West don't even know the names of their neighbours. He said, that can't be right, can it? I said, I think it can. How can that be? How can you live when you don't even know the person's name who lives next door to you? He said, do you not love? Oh dear, that was quite a dagger in my heart. They've got so little in terms of material stuff, but their community is so rich, so utterly rich. It's beautiful. And I think probably one of the problems of our Western world that's not really being addressed is, do you know, I think loneliness and discontent is rife. We're living in such a funny old time. I mean, Brexit and Donald Trump and all these things. And people are restless. And people know that all the gadgets is not really doing it for them. And they're busier than ever and emptier than ever. And I think our culture, probably like never before that I've known, is so in need of Jesus Christ. It's so in need of knowing that there is a point to life. There is a bigger purpose. There is a bigger calling. That life can be so rich. But how are they going to know if we don't tell them? And if you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm not sure my life's that rich. Well, I would like to challenge you. Well, why? Maybe we need to be taking steps of faith. Maybe we need to be stepping out. Some of us went to a thing called Lead Academy over the weekend, and we were hearing people just saying, why don't you just invite people to come to church? And the biggest thing that puts people off coming is because they're frightened that someone's going to say no. And so the speaker we were listening to saying, you know, the victory is not to ask and get the person to come. The victory is just to ask, because that does something to our souls that's really important. So I want to leave you with a few things to think about. I'm going to shut up now. Have you got a testimony worth sharing? You should have if you know Jesus. If it's a testimony from donkeys years ago, well then maybe it's time for an update. Why not go into this week saying, Lord, I want an up-to-date testimony. Can you use me this week? Give me an opportunity to invite someone to come to a service or invite someone to come to something. Lord, help me to see the people who are truly lonely. Because I can actually stop that loneliness if I take a bit of interest in them. Lord, help me to be your active servant this week. Help me to tell people about you so that people say, I want to come and see this Jesus too. I love the way this story finishes. Coming back to the Samaritan woman. Many of the Samaritans from the town believed in Jesus because of the woman's testimony. Isn't that marvelous? Wouldn't that be fantastic if it was said, many people believed in Jesus because of the testimony that I was able to give. I'd love that. All she did was she told them everything. He told her everything she ever did, and she just passed it on. You know, we have got incredible good news. We really, really have. So we need to share it. So this week, can I encourage you, if all of us did that, if all of us said, Lord, give me a testimony this week, give me the opportunity this week, we might see more of these empty seats filled. It's up to you.